Welcome to Startup Success, the podcast for startup founders and investors. Here, you'll find stories of success from others in the trenches as they work to scale some of the fastest growing startups in the world. Stories that will help you in your own journey. Startup Success starts now.
Welcome to Startup Success. Today we have Marco Garganta as a guest, and I am really looking forward to our conversation. Marco is currently the founder and CEO of Plus Plus. He has extensive startup experience. Prior to Plus Plus, he founded Maracana, which was acquired by Twitter. And he's also involved with the Sandhill Angels and StartX. So I know Marco is going to have a lot of helpful insights to share today. So welcome, Marco. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, Kate. Great being here. Thanks for
having me. Thank you. Thank you. I know you're really busy, so maybe you could start and tell us a little bit about Plus Plus and what you're doing there.
Yeah, so once upon a time, I ran a software training company with my brother. That was Maracana. And we built it, and then Twitter acquired us in 2013. So we went in-house, and basically what the leadership there wanted to do is enable Twitter engineers to do their best work, right? And so if you kind of think about what do you need to do best work, you need the right skills. So how do we enable people to have the right skills? So we came up with this concept of peer learning, where people learn from one another. And then to do that at scale, we needed to build a system. So we kind of built that at Twitter. It worked well. And then I had this insight, well, if it works there, it's going to work elsewhere, right? Other companies must have the same issues. So I left Twitter a couple of years later to start Plus Plus, to basically recreate the magic of what we did at Twitter elsewhere, right? So essentially what we do is enable democratizing learning at technology companies first and foremost.
I like that because that's so critical for those companies, right? You know, and it's difficult to do while scaling and growing, right? That, and you probably add a lot of help to that process for them, I'm guessing.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, we're fortunate to work with some really amazing customers. And so they challenge us a lot, as you can imagine, right? But I'd rather have it that way than...
But does that force you to kind of innovate and, you know, make changes to what you're offering, I'm guessing, based on their needs? I mean, that's got to be a good thing, right? To get that kind of feedback.
Yeah, so early on we realized, I mean, ultimately we want, you know, to be the default learning platform for, you know, the world. But we figured we start with Silicon Valley because Silicon Valley is sort of paving the future of work. So might as well have the initial referenceable customers be from our own backyard, right? And so early on we signed up with Salesforce was our customer one, and then Airbnb, Shopify, LinkedIn, Netflix, etc. So you kind of get the idea. So these are all like large brand name companies. And this is something that's, I guess, not very typical for enterprise SaaS companies to start from like a handful of like marquee logos. Usually what I see, at least with my peers, is, you know, they land some smaller deals and then kind of work their way up. We sort of did the opposite. And the advantages and disadvantages to both approaches. We just kind of chose to start from the top down. So, yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because when you just rattled off your client list, that was the first thing I thought. That is such an impressive list of clients to start with, especially Salesforce as your first client. So I think that's a testament to what you're doing and offering, right? So that's exciting. And you mentioned something else that caught my ear. You mentioned you started Maracana with your brother. So is your brother involved with Plus Plus as well?
Yeah. So him and I were, well, we had a whole team, right? We were about 15 people at the time of Twitter acquisition. So we built a previous company together, worked on that for 8 years. And then we got into Twitter, worked on Twitter University together. I left early. I left 2 years in. He stayed for 7 years at Twitter, and he just joined us as a head of product. His name is Alexander. So he just joined us in September and now is leading all the product development at Plus Plus. So it's our third venture together, I guess. So
that's great to hear, because on so many of these conversations, I hear stories about, you know, difficulties with founding partners and, you know, among the leadership team, and the fact that, you know, you're now onto your third kind of venture together and your siblings. I think that says a lot about your very complimentary of your relationship. So tell me about Marikana a little bit more and what it was like to go through the acquisition by Twitter, because I know a lot of people listening today, that's a dream, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so at the time of the acquisition, you know, we basically owned the company 100%, two of us. We had no investors. We were a services company. And so Twitter approached us about acquisition. And so to your point, everyone, as an entrepreneur, this is sort of like a dream come true, right? Like a big, you know, internet companies like approaching you and like offering to acquire you. But then once I started like sort of peeling the onion of what the deal looks like, I was like, wait, so I'm going to exchange what I own 100% of, fully control and understand, for basically a bag of stock, which at the time was private. So A, I can't sell it. B, I don't understand Twitter's business at all. And C, I'm going to be CEO minus who knows what. So I'm going to be like low in the totem pole. And so what a lot of people don't know is that we told Twitter no at least a handful of times, right? We were like, we don't think this acquisition actually makes sense for us, right? And so, but they kept pushing and being persistent. And then there was a point in time where I saw something different. So basically, it was really hard. Like, finances are very fuzzy when you project 4 or 5 years into the future, unless your CFO is Birkeland, right? Most of us can't do that. So right. To me, this two options were very fuzzy. And it boiled down to, I looked for three things. I looked for, where am I gonna see what it takes to impact a billion people, right? Because we were not doing that at Marikana. Then I was looking at, where am I going to be, get to meet amazing, amazing people that are going to inspire me. And at Marikana, we were a tiny team. So I was working the same team for many, many years. I didn't grow that as much, right? And then C, I wanted to see what it takes to build a company at that scale. And so I was like, cool, I'll, finances aside, because I can't figure them out, right? Didn't have Birkeland. Let's just take this. Let's take the red pill and let's go for the joyride and see, you know, what we get out of that. And so that was a journey. I got those three things that I wanted to get. And
That makes the story even better that you said no a few times. And then I like how you broke down the three things that made you reconsider, because I wouldn't have guessed any of those three things, but they're so important. I wrote them down. I really like the last one because, you know, I think that's so important. And did you find that all three of those things were met? Like, you know, I guess you did get to a billion people, and I'm sure you worked with amazing people at Twitter, correct?
Yeah. I mean, the people, I was just blown. I was like a kid in a candy store, right? Like, and this is Twitter, and Twitter just went public shortly afterwards. And so it was, you know, we were definitely one of the top sort of internet companies at the time. I got to meet with some amazing people. Many of them are now investors in Plus. And also, like, you know, Twitter was my first full-time job, like, to actually work somewhere, right? And I was like almost 40 years old, and so it was interesting to go through that experience of actually seeing what professionally run company looks like from the inside,
right?
Being an entrepreneur. So.
Right. I'm sure that's given you some good insight now as you're building Plus, right? About scaling, yeah, and how to organize and what, you know, kind of teams you need. And so, you know, now that you're involved with Plus, I keep hearing over and over again that founders should be involved in a founder circle or network, how important it is. Are you involved in either of those? I mean, how do you, you know, get kind of real-time help from peers that are doing what you're doing?
Yeah, so as you probably know, so both Jeff Brooklyn and I and six other guys were part of a forum which spun out of Entrepreneurs Organization, EO Forum. So we go way back, probably about 15 years back, and we meet on a monthly basis. And so this is my peer group. This is the eight CEOs, eight guys I get to interact with and compare notes on everything. Like, it's really deep level of trust, deep connection, and it's 360, business, self, personal, family, everything, right? So that peer group is hugely profound for me, my life, beyond just as an entrepreneur, right? You can think of it as a men's group. For women, I know that's more comes more natural to have those types of relationships. I'm very fortunate to have that. And then on the other hand, we joined StartX, which is a Stanford accelerator program. We did that a couple of years ago. And so that's also a wonderful organization. So, yeah.
Okay. And were you involved with either during the acquisition by Twitter?
So not with StartX, but but my forum was definitely, that was the group that I leaned on.
Okay, I was going to say, think that you would need somebody, a group of people to lean on during that experience, because I'm sure, now it's a success story and, it's exciting to hear about, but I'm sure at the time it was stressful a bit too, right?
Yeah, that was definitely, it was super, super stressful. It was sort of one of these like red pill, blue pill experiences, right? Like Neo in Matrix. And so like, what do you choose? And, we could have easily chosen the blue pill, woke up and forgotten that the whole thing ever happened, right? And kept on a steady path. Instead, we chose this red pill, which had us basically jump into the abyss, hoping, that things are going to work out the way they did. But we had no guarantees, right? There was very little, if any, safety net. And so kind of computing that, figuring that out, and you can you can try to do that rationally, and then you run into a whole bunch of roadblocks because you don't have the data to figure it out rationally, right? Or you can go emotionally, like going deep down into like what feels right. Mm-hmm. And so definitely, doing it by myself would be a very lonely experience. So having a trusted group of peers to lean on, it was, very, very required. So.
Right, because it's the decision, like you said, comes down to both the emotional and all, the factual, logical data points. So did anything go wrong in that acquisition where that, that made you second guess your decision? That I'm asking because it would be interesting to highlight to founders that might be going through that right now, that then ultimately obviously worked out because it's a success story, but at the time made you second guess which choice you made.
We joined. I keep talking about Twitter, peacetime Twitter and a wartime Twitter, right? So when we joined Twitter, it was the peacetime company, right? It was pre-IPO. Everything was rosy. If you wanted to spin up a project, you get a headcount. You can you can do anything you want, right? And then the IPO came around, and then our regime changed. We became much more, numbers driven, and we had, public markets to report to. And so it was very, very different Twitter overnight internally, right? I changed in that. Remember how I never had a manager? Well, in that one first year, I think I went through like three or five managers, right?
That's a big change.
Yeah. So I got what I asked for very rapidly.
Yes. So, okay. Yeah, those are big adjustments to make, definitely. Yes, yes. And so you mentioned just a few minutes ago, StartX. What is mm-hmm. that? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so StartX is it's a program that started at Stanford, and the idea was to support Stanford's best and brightest startups, right? And the other idea in that was, you know, what I like about StartX, unlike other accelerators, is that it's a non-profit. So it's not there to take a certain percentage of your equity. It's not, you know, so it's that, as a matter of fact, that's the kind of the tagline, right? It's for entrepreneurs who don't need to give up equity. And so that resonated with me. And so we joined it in 2019 when we went through the program. Different people get different things out of the program. And so what I wanted to get out of that is that's sort of like a turning point. For a while, I was struggling with, do I want to build what I call a rhino company? So like $100 million company that, you know, more or less fully control and so on. Or do I want to build a unicorn company, which, you know, it's much bigger, yes. but it's a different game. And there are pros and cons to both. And I was sort of like evaluating those, again, red pill, blue pill sort of scenarios.
Right.
Yeah. And so when we basically decided, or I chose, I want the unicorn path, that's when StartX made a lot of sense. It basically gave us a lot of challenges to think bigger. And what I got out of it is A, thinking bigger, B, I got an amazing advisor, Mahmood Panjwani. So yeah, those are the two things that kind of got the most out
of it. I like that, challenges to think bigger, because a lot of times I hear that when I talk to venture capital partners, that sometimes in pitches that they hear, the founders are so, you know, niche focused, they're not thinking big enough, you know? And so I like how you phrase that. I could see where that would be very helpful. And I'm guessing, you know, you probably still work with the mentor that you had from StartX today, correct?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. And the nonprofit factor, it does. It adds a nice component to it. And then I saw that you're also involved in Sandhill Angels. So tell us about Sandhill Angels. I love the name. So
Yeah. So Sandhill Angels is one of the oldest angel groups in Silicon Valley. It started about 20 years ago. And it started as a couple of ex-operators, you know, getting together and saying, hey, let's do a deal flow together, let's invest together, right? And so then they grew it into an organization. We now capped it at about 100 members. And so we've invested in a couple of hundred startups, and, you know, it's a pretty active group. The funny story with Sandhill is, so Maracana was a services company, right?
Consulting
training company. At one point, I attempted to raise money, and I actually pitched to Sandhill. I actually got invited to, you know, what's called a dinner meeting, which is a final meeting. This is 2007. And then I decided to scrape that and go back to just, you know, not raising money and owning the company 100%. So anyway, so that was that. And then fast forward post Twitter, we suddenly had some liquidity, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start angel investing. And to learn the ropes, I need to surround myself with people who are much better than me, right? So I joined Sandhill. So I went from pitching them to joining them to being on the board of the organization. And then as I was starting Plus, I was like, okay, well, maybe it's now time for me to also pitch again to Sandhill. So I stepped from the board, and now Sandhill is actually, they led our friends and family around. So now they're investors in the company. So there's all this like...
What a great trajectory, yes.
Right. They keep swapping the side of the table that I'm sitting in that organization.
Yes. So, How did you originally get hooked up with them?
I forget. It was just one of the angel groups. You know, there's only a handful of reputable angel groups in the Bay Area. So it was one of them. And yeah, so this is, you know, 2007. Yeah.
And you've had this trajectory where you've literally played all these different roles with them. I love that.
Yeah.
That's great. And so, you know, we have a lot of startup founders listening. And they always like to hear, you know, what challenges other founders are facing. I mean, what are you working on, like, right now at Plus that's kind of, you know, a challenge for you this quarter right now?
Yeah, you know, so in like being an enterprise SaaS company, there's sort of certain milestones, right? So you know, you start customer one, then you want to get to that magical product market fit, then a 1 million ARR, then you know, fundraising. All so there's all this entire sort of journey. And so what we're at right now is still honing in our go-to-market fit, right? So while we have some amazing logos and they're all renewing and all that with us, we don't quite have the motions of how to do that repeatably and predictably. We have some of that, but it's not dialed in, right? It's not fully quite scalable yet. So that go-to-market is our next big challenge. So that's the main focus.
That's a big one. I can see where reaching that predictable nature, where you can start to forecast more accurately, would be very important for your organization. Yeah. Do you find it's a little more stressful with investors versus Marikana when you and your brother own the company and we're doing it without? Or do they add, you know, some, besides just their investment, also some helpful, you know, knowledge and insights?
It's a great question. And I particularly was struggling with that, right? So in my entire entrepreneurial career, 20 some years, I never raised money, right? Like I built these businesses, but I did it on my, you know, on credit cards or, you know, on my own cash. And so I was struggling with that, right? Like it kind of changes everything. And I remember, I mean, I had some conversations with Jeff Berkland about that and like pros and cons of like, you know, bootstrapping versus, you know, having investors and so forth. And then there was a point in time where I was like, okay, well, let's do what I call a safe test. Let's kind of try it out and see what happens, right? And so for us, the safe test was to do a friends and family round. So fun fact, Jeff was actually the very first check in that round.
Well, I know Jeff, so I'm sure, you know, he did the full financial scrutiny. So I would say the investment is a huge compliment. So that's good.
Thank you. Yeah. So we did the friends and family round about a year ago. And I was like, wow, actually, there's way more advantages to having investors than not. Like it challenged us again. And I kind of appreciate that. Suddenly, I had to, you know, we chose to do monthly reporting. We chose, like, we had to have dial in our numbers, our processes. And so all that was actually sort of like a part of growing up. And so I enjoyed it. I was like, I should have, you know, that's, if I look back, that's one thing I would have done earlier, raise money earlier than, you know, kicking down the road. So yeah.
What a helpful insight. And I like how you tied it to the fact that having these investors, you know, motivates you to kind of raise the bar a bit with your reporting back and, you know, reaching milestones, I'm assuming. That's really interesting. And I like the safe test with the friends and family round. That's a good way to kind of dip your toe into it.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it was dipping the toe to see like, what is this going to feel like, right? And it felt great. So I was like, okay, let's do more. So,
yes. That's great. Any other insights you can share with founders? I mean, you have such a compelling story. You've really done so much.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I early on, I over-obsessed about having the right product, having the product market fit. And what I meant by that is we kind of defined it as having customers that are renewing and expanding, right? And so we you know, I spend a lot of time on customer success, like making sure that the product is, we are constantly improving it, making sure it, you know, it fits the customer's needs and that they're happy and expanding and renewing. So we did that well, but we did that at the cost of not focusing on getting more new prospects into the funnel. And so I over-indexed on product and on customer success at the cost of go-to-market and
acquisition.
Yeah. So that was one thing looking back. I would have probably balanced that a little better. I would have raised money earlier and I would have gotten, you know, somebody to, you know, to own, get building the pipeline. So,
You know, I think it's a fine balance because I was with a startup several years ago and they did the opposite. They pushed the go-to-market strategy too fast. And so we were in a huge acquisition phase, but the product, we kept having issues with the product. So it can go either way. So I, you know, the fact that I do think it's a fine balance. I mean, and it also, I think, speaks to all the success you've had, that that's something you care about, you know, but then you have to figure out how do you get that balance. So it's interesting. Yeah, that's a good one. Yes. So, you know, you've done so much. You're involved with two great organizations, Sandhill Angels, StartX. Now you're working on Plus Plus. If listeners want to reach out for more information, learn about Plus Plus or some of these other organizations you're involved with, what's the best way to reach you?
I would probably imagine Twitter is an easy way to reach out to me. I'm just M-A-R-K-O-G, Marco G, at my handle on Twitter. I'm also easy to find on LinkedIn and, you know, places like that. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like you shared a lot of real helpful information for those that are on this path as well. And, you know, I know you have even more success in front of you. So it was great to chat with you.
You've been listening to Startup Success. To make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Like what you hear? Tap the number of stars you think the show deserves in Apple Podcasts. For more tools and resources for your own startup success, check out BirklandAssociates.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.